Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning slash evening, however you want to take this. It's 12:30 in the morning right now. Let's see here, Saturday, March 28th. You're listening to The Basketball Truth, presented by the Red Light Sports Network, with your host, as always, Kevin Cunningham. I'm sitting here looking at the little Blog Talk Radio studio, and it looks really not extremely different, but it just looks different. And there were some technical issues coming into this, so hopefully there's nothing that goes wrong these next 45-ish minutes. But I'm joined with my co-host today, Ben Holtzeter. Ben, how you doing?
I've been better, Kevin, I can say. I've been better.
You've been better. I like the joke. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. Hopefully my computer doesn't kick me out of here. 1 second.
Yeah, let's hope not. Got a lot to talk about. Good games.
Yeah. Hold on, my computer's like going nuts right now. Okay, that's wonderful. All right, well, anyway. Going to the Midwest. Kentucky, jeez.
Kentucky, yeah.
On right now.
Very good.
So Kentucky manhandled West Virginia. I thought West Virginia coming into the game could have an opportunity to do some damage just because of their press and just kind of the style of the way they play the game. My computer's still going nuts. But obviously that didn't prove to be the case. Essentially, the West Virginia is kind of a smaller team in general, and they were basically pressing a team full court that's basically full of NBA bodies, not necessarily skill-wise, even though some of them are, but just height-wise. That's why basically no one presses in the NBA, is because any team can beat it, simply because of the size. Just being able to throw it over defenders, it's just a lot easier when most of your guys are at least 6'4", outside of the point guard for the most part. But so that's how West Virginia basically got crushed. I mean, the Mountaineers all year kind of reliant on their defense and forcing turnovers and getting easy baskets, so they just couldn't do that against Kentucky. So they got doubled up. Literally. What's that?
Smallest team left in the field playing the largest team left in the field. Fun fact. Notre Dame's the second smallest and Wisconsin's the second biggest. Just a little information for you there. Height-wise.
Yeah, Notre Dame. Yeah, I don't know. I like Notre Dame's ability to shoot the three ball and space the floor and possibly get Kentucky to play smaller. It's just that Kentucky's lineup of guys they play are all big. I'm trying to think of the one guy's name. I know it's something Hawkins, but he's another guard that they can play if they needed to go smaller. But otherwise, I mean, outside of Tyler Ulis, it's... Yeah, Dominique Hawkins. It's literally just guys that are 6'6 and taller. So, I don't know. It could be interesting from that perspective, but before getting too much into that, Notre Dame beat Wichita State yesterday. At the half, let's see, at the half, Notre Dame was up by 3, and then the second half, they scored 48 points. I don't necessarily have the box score up right now because, like I said, my computer's going nuts. But
yeah, Wichita State had the lead there in the second half for a little bit. They were up 38-37. I was watching this one pretty closely. I was rooting for Wichita State. I just like their story. I would have liked to see a rematch with Kentucky after how they got bounced last year as the one seed. Wichita State was up 38-37, and then after that, Notre Dame just went on that tear where they just couldn't seem to miss. They shot, 75%, I think, in the second half, which is just crazy. They do that against Kentucky. They have a shot.
Yeah, I mean, that's that's ultimately what most of these teams have a chance is, I mean, unless you're just a completely really solid all-around team like a Wisconsin, like an Arizona, Duke to an extent, Gonzaga to an extent, but I almost put more faith in just the consistency of both Wisconsin and Arizona. I would pick probably Duke or Gonzaga over Arizona, but I just think that Arizona is probably more consistent than either of those two teams. But Gonzaga is, I think, a lot better than people realize coming into this tournament. But so sticking with the Midwest, like we said, Notre Dame just kind of got hot, and Wichita State just couldn't keep up. If there is one, you know, way to beat Kentucky, if you're not, you know, if you don't have the bigs, which, you know, 99% of these teams don't, Wisconsin's got a shot inside. Arizona's got a shot inside. Duke's got Okafor, but Emile Jefferson's fine, but he's going to get out.
Plumlee.
Yeah, Plumlee's. Plumlee's
played 5 minutes
the third
tonight.
Plumlee brother for a reason. I mean, some of these teams have bigs, you know, to literally match up. I mean, probably Wisconsin and Arizona are your best shots as far as interior play. But I think the key is just Notre Dame being able to make Kentucky uncomfortable. And by doing that, it takes hitting three balls, which is what Notre Dame's all about, and forcing Kentucky to at least think about going small. If Kentucky is able to, you know, run their stuff and do what they want to offensively and have mismatches because of their height, then Notre Dame's going to give up 80 points. But if Notre Dame can kind of dictate how the game is played and not back down, which I don't think they are at all, but it's just going to be a long night if their threes aren't falling. And what John Calipari has basically been saying all year is that no team's going to beat us as long as we don't let them beat us from three. So they understand that they have to overplay passing lanes and be aggressive on the perimeter. And if guys get by them, that's fine because we have eight, you know, 6'10" or taller players inside waiting to double down and make it impossible for you to shoot over us. So that's why Kentucky's, you know, as good as they are is because they can play aggressive on defense and they have that back line that's literally like an NBA back line to protect the rim. So that's, you know, what their defense is kind of predicated on. And that's what they're going to try to force Notre Dame to do. So it'll be interesting to see a team that, you know, is going to obviously try and knock down threes against a team that's their goal is to stop Notre Dame from knocking down threes. I would say Kentucky by probably 10 or 12. I think it could be fairly close late, like a 6-7 point game, but Notre Dame's going to have to end up fouling. And I just don't think that Notre Dame's going to be able to hit, you know, 10, 12 threes because I just think Kentucky's going to run them off that line more often than they would want to. I think Notre Dame can put a scare in Kentucky, but ultimately, I just don't think they have enough because I think Kentucky is smart enough to realize that they're the best team in the country as long as the other team doesn't knock down threes left and right. So I think Calipari is smart enough, and I think the team is, while they're extremely young, they've, you know, been through this before, a lot of them last year, and the freshmen don't seem to shy away from the big moments. So I just think they're playing extremely well as a team, and I think they know what they have to do. So I would favor Kentucky by, I don't know, probably 10, because I just don't trust Notre Dame to be able to shoot the way Kentucky absolutely does not want them to. So what are your thoughts on that game?
Well, first, yeah, going back to Kentucky-West Virginia, interesting side note of something you didn't bring up, I thought you might, is Daxter Miles. And his little guarantee before that they were going to win and Kentucky was going to be 36-1. A lot of Kentucky players took offense to that, tweeted after the game 36-1 with one spelled W-O-N, so that was pretty funny. Miles went 0-for-3 in the game, had just an awful game, worst you could possibly do after making a guarantee, it seems like. And then he hid in the bathroom afterward and didn't want to talk to the reporter. Then when he did, he pulled Marshawn Lynch and said the same thing basically over and over again. They played great, I believe, was his three-word choice. No matter what they asked him, he pretty much just said they played great. They played great. So freshman kid, we'll learn from that. Coach Bob Huggins had said that he was fine with Baxter saying that, but come on. I mean, motivated Kentucky to just double up West Virginia. It was tied for the worst beatdown in Sweet 16 history. Fewest points ever scored by a team and by West Virginia in the Sweet 16 since it expanded to 64. So, yeah, he just was eating his words. He's not going to have a pleasant next couple of days. We'll see how he deals with that going into next season. The Notre Dame-Wichita State game, he pretty much went over just how well Notre Dame shot in the second half. And now Notre Dame's going to play Kentucky. Notre Dame's not a very deep team. They only go six, maybe seven max. Kentucky, as we know, has their five backups could probably start for almost any team in the NCAA. They're that good and that deep. It's just so impressive watching Kentucky play. And as a Wisconsin fan, looking for them to maybe get revenge in the Final Four, kind of disappointing that Kentucky is just, this is the year that Kentucky is unbelievably good. Yesterday, Karl Anthony Towns, the presumed number one pick, he didn't even have a single made basket against West Virginia, and Kentucky still blew him out, which says all you need to know. He had 1 point on 1-for-2 free throws, but their length, their defense was just unstoppable. It's pretty ridiculous how good Kentucky looked. Against UNC, I do want to see how Kentucky does answer that call of defending the three. You know, they've been saying it all year that Calipari especially, you know, we're not going to let a team beat us shooting the three. Kentucky hasn't played a team even close to as good at shooting three as Notre Dame, especially when Notre Dame is on, you know, when they're in their groove. So I kind of want to see if Calipari's team can back that up. Can they actually get out there and stop Notre Dame from catching fire like they did in the second half against Wichita? That'll be an interesting contrast. They're not going to press like West Virginia did all over the court. Notre Dame's better in their half-court offense. They're going to try to slow down Kentucky and hit those threes. So we'll see how that goes. But I just don't see Kentucky losing to Notre Dame. I think if they lose, it's either going to be in the if they lose, I think it's going to be the Final Four. We had discussed this off-air that it's much better to have 6 days to prepare for a team than it is one and a half. And I just, if Kentucky whooped West Virginia with 6 days for West Virginia to prepare, it's going to be very difficult for Arizona or Wisconsin to knock them off. But I think that's the only shot. If Kentucky gets through this Notre Dame game, I think they're, and wins that first Final Four game, I think that they're a lock for 40-0. And you had said how much you thought Notre Dame was going to lose by. 10, I believe, is what you said. Interesting little note. Pulled up the Vegas lines. Kentucky opened as an 11.5-point favorite over Notre Dame for those that gamble. but Notre Dame, the line is down to 11 right now. So, I mean, it's shifted a little bit, but nothing drastic. But I see it as probably about a double-digit game as well. It'll just come down to free throws at the end, how many Kentucky makes, and I don't see it being – maybe Notre Dame can hang with them but for a little while, but I do see Kentucky pulling away unless something crazy happens. So those are my thoughts.
Yeah. I'm glad I'm being in Vegas or kind of in tune there. Obviously, I'm a professional gambler on the side, so
– you are. Very in tune. That was a good call.
That's reassuring. One thing I was kind of curious about, and you brought it up, that we were talking off the air, and if there's a shot that this Kentucky team's going to lose, it's going to be in the Final Four because you have a week to prepare, especially with the team that, you know, whoever comes out of the West is going to be a complete team that, you know, can play different styles, and they take care of the ball, and they shoot the ball well from the free throw line. So if Kentucky does start fouling, obviously they're not going to get into foul trouble, but both Wisconsin and Arizona aren't going to beat themselves. It's going to be a difficult matchup in the Final Four for Kentucky. Not that, you know, I'm going to favor Wisconsin or Arizona, but it's going to be a hard-fought game, and it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be a 39-point blowout. It's going to be a game like against Cincinnati. It's just that Cincinnati didn't have anywhere the offensive potential that an Arizona or Wisconsin had. I think both those teams play good defense, like Cincinnati does. West Virginia plays good defense, but just their style didn't match up. But so I think you're going to get another hard-fought, talking like I'm from Boston, another hard-fought game in the Final Four. But I think that while Kentucky knows, you know, I'm kind of somewhat backtracking on my thought. I mean, I do think that teams need, you know, as much time as possible. I think that's the best way to prepare for Kentucky is to know, you know, just scouting film and exploiting any possible weakness you can find, especially if you have multiple players that can do it, you know, like a Wisconsin or an Arizona. Notre Dame's got that quality, but it's just different because they're so reliant on shooting from the perimeter. But so if Kentucky only has, you know, realistically a day to prepare, you know, do they have enough practice time to truly understand what it means to completely eliminate a dangerous team like Notre Dame from three? I think that if they had a week, their game plan would be a lot more solid and their players would truly understand it more, especially with how young they are and how old Notre Dame is. Not that Notre Dame was looking ahead, obviously, but I just feel as though Notre Dame was looking more toward Kentucky and maybe some practice time was given to, hey, if we face these monsters, here's what we're going to do, as opposed to Kentucky, which was probably completely concerned about West Virginia's press and what they can do, as opposed to saying, hey, let's, you know, practice some against Notre Dame and Wichita State and what we might see a couple days later. I just think that in this case that it may help Notre Dame that Kentucky only has a day to prepare and say, hey, we have to get out on three-point shooters. Well, how exactly if all of them can shoot? So I don't know. I still believe that the Final Four game is going to be the most difficult for them, not the championship game, not this Notre Dame game. But I do think that it helps Notre Dame in the fact that they are so experienced and Kentucky is very young, even though they've, you know, half the team's been through this a year ago. I do think it would help Kentucky a lot to have time to prepare for a team that's as good as Notre Dame is from shooting threes. I don't think that changes anything, but I still think Kentucky wins by around 10.
I agree with you. I do think out of the matchups, this is the second best chance a team has, just because, like you said, Notre Dame's so experienced. I brought up how well Notre Dame shoots three. Kentucky hasn't seen anything like it. I just think that in the championship game, Duke, Gonzaga, possibly Michigan State or Louisville just doesn't have a complete enough team to take down Kentucky. I think that it'll be a fun matchup, especially if it's Okafor or Gonzaga. I don't see Michigan State or Louisville having enough offense to take Kentucky to the wire, but I just think that you're right on with this particular matchup with Notre Dame having such good shooters that maybe a day's rest, a day's prep is going to help Notre Dame in this case, just because Kentucky hasn't seen the likes of them before. But for different style teams like Wisconsin, like in Arizona, I think it is better still for the weight.
Yeah. Agreed. Moving to the West, unless you've got more on the Midwest.
No, I think we got it covered.
Alrighty. So Wisconsin beat North Carolina. I was somewhat watching this game on and off. North Carolina, I mean, from what I gathered from the game, was that North Carolina pushed them basically from the start, and not necessarily that they controlled the game, but I mean, if you were a Wisconsin fan, you know, even with 6 minutes left, they were down by seven, and it was like, okay, and the announcers were, I was listening, and the announcers were talking about how good Wisconsin is when they have the lead with 5 minutes to go. You know, they're like 100 15-3 or something over the last 5 years. It was something crazy like that. And Wisconsin was down 7 with like 6 minutes left. And it's like, okay, well, obviously that's not going to happen. And then once 5 minutes rolls around, Wisconsin pulls off like a 9-0 run. And they have the lead by like 2 with 5 minutes left. And it's like, well, that was interesting because I thought there was literally no shot that that would happen. But then Wisconsin just kind of eked it out at the end. I mean, what was your take on that game? And, you know, as a Wisconsin supporter, how much were you kind of crapping your pants during that one?
Well, I wouldn't say I was crapping my pants quite, but Notre Dame, I think, did control the tempo throughout the game until the very last 5 minutes. Notre Dame kind of got it going up-tempo. The only Badger that reacted well to that was Sam Decker. He had a phenomenal first half, phenomenal game. He kept Wisconsin in it because the rest of the Badgers starting five just could not adjust to that tempo that North Carolina wanted to push. And the way the game started was two uncontested fast-break dunks by North Carolina. It was 4-0 like that. Wisconsin was down 3 at the half, 3 or 4 after a Decker putback. But, yeah, Wisconsin just looked kind of lost what to do, but I wasn't worried. I knew they'd make good second-half adjustments, but even in the second half with Kaminsky playing better, Hayes didn't have a very good game. Trayvon Jackson was back, and he did a few good things. This is his first game in a few months. He had missed 20 straight games with a broken foot, so that was nice to have his depth, and Bo Ryan kept him in there at the end when they needed some leadership, so that was kind of surprising to see him still rely on Trayvon with how rusty he might have been. But then again, Koenig was in foul trouble. He ended up, that's Bronson Koenig, the Wisconsin's other starting point guard, fouled out. We had 5 fouls. He's been picking up a lot of fouls, but that's another story. And then also Zach Showalter, who's the most athletic Badger, is what many people say. He's a short guard, but he's super athletic. Came in, got 6 huge points for the Badgers, helped them spark that run to get that lead with just a little over 5 minutes left. I was thinking the same thing you were. It was like, oh, it looks like they're not going to have the lead with 5 minutes, and then all of a sudden just a 9-0 run. And then they take control. And they are 116-3. I looked it up, including perfect 33-0 when leading with 5 minutes left. That's over the last 5 years. So, I mean, they're tough to beat in crunch time. They're very tough. One of those losses is against Kentucky. I'd have to look who the other two were. But, I liked how Wisconsin adjusted towards the end. But I was kind of, they kind of played the same way they did against Oregon, which was just lackadaisical. They kind of seemed to have bigger things on their mind and were like, yeah, we'll get Pat, you know. They kept waiting. A lot of their players were like just waiting for them to, for another gear to kick in, and it almost was too late for them to come back. I don't know if they were looking ahead to Arizona or still looking ahead to Kentucky, but these last two games, even the first game against the 16th team, they just seem not as focused to me as they did last year. Last year they were super committed, super focused, and this year it's like they're kind of just like, okay, let's get into the next round, We're not going to pay as much attention to this team, and then they have to end up coming back, or they have a close contest that you don't think they're going to have. Because I honestly, before this game, I thought they would beat North Carolina by double digits. They ended up winning by 7. I just didn't think North Carolina would be able to force that pace on Wisconsin, and they did, it effectively. So hopefully Wisconsin's got, you know, as a fan, hopefully they have the whatever it is, the flip switched on for the switch flipped on, excuse me, for the Arizona game, because they are not going to get away with it against them. So yeah, those are my thoughts.
Yeah, I would completely agree with you. I mean, I haven't watched too much of Wisconsin intently in the tournament like I've wanted to. I've definitely seen more Arizona, although I didn't catch any of the Arizona Xavier game, or actually I guess I caught a few minutes of it, and I mean, you know, like I said, I didn't see much of it, but it was a closer game. I think the 8-point difference was probably indicative of what happened. I think Xavier pushed Arizona at times, but Arizona is just too talented. I don't think Arizona is as incredibly talented as some people may think they are. But they just have an all-around complete team that has size. They have a stretch four. They have a guy they can go to if they need a basket in Stanley Johnson. They have a three-point shooter or two. You know, starting with Gabe York, he was kind of the huge part against just the key guy against Xavier. Xavier was running a 1-3-1 zone, and Arizona was kind of struggling with it until Gabe York just caught fire. So they have multiple ways to beat you. I guess that's what I mean by having an all-around team. You know, I don't think Gabe York's an outstanding talent. I don't think T.J. McConnell at point guard is an outstanding talent. I don't think Caleb Tarczewski inside is an outstanding talent. I just think they're all really solid players. I think Stanley Johnson will be really good. I don't think he's a superstar today. But I think they're just collectively experienced outside of Johnson. And they know what it takes to win. And they've been determined to play Wisconsin. And I think Wisconsin's kind of been determined to play Arizona again. I think, you know, as soon as this region was announced, you know, at least we talked about it, and it was just kind of like, okay, this is basically setting up for a collision course between the top two teams in here for a rematch. I mean, North Carolina could give Wisconsin troubles, and Arizona.
So weird, too, that three possible rematches, like the committee just was like, oh, last year's bracket worked well. Let's do the same again for this region.
No. How do you feel about the game being out west? I mean, as far as, you know, last year compared to this year, what do you think about the game? Who do you favor?
Well, it was out west last year. I'd have to look up exactly where it was. I don't have that pulled up right now. But, I mean, they still took down Arizona by one. I think it was 64-63, if I believe, in overtime. Great game. Probably one of the top three Badger games I've watched all time. The interesting thing is everyone keeps bringing up how Arizona this year has I'm blanking on his name right now. I was just looking this up. The Arizona last year when they played Wisconsin, they were down.
Ashley.
Yeah, Brandon Ashley. And,
yeah,
like, obviously Ashley is a huge, you know, key. And it's like, okay, Wisconsin's play. A lot of pundits have been talking about the team, say, well, it's basically the same team, except Arizona has Brandon Ashley. So that's why I'm picking Arizona. But nobody, like, mentions, is it Nick Johnson, who got picked fourth overall? In the draft from Arizona? Aaron Gordon, who was picked fourth in the draft. Like, everyone seems to forget that he was such a huge part of that team in the Elite Eight run for them last year with the absence of Ashley.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think Gordon was a huge key, and he was the reason the game was so close against what happened. He had a lot of good minutes. He's a big guy, 6'9", 6'10". So I don't think it's just the same Arizona team, but added Ashley back. But I do think that Arizona, it's going to be interesting because Xavier, I watched that whole game, just the 1-3-1 that they deployed was so, it just completely screwed up Arizona's offense. And they don't have a great offense already. They're known for their defense. I believe they're third in defensive efficiency. And Wisconsin's first in offensive efficiency. But Xavier's 1-3-1 just totally messed up until McConnell and Gabe York, as you had said, kind of went off in the end there. They just kind of decided that they needed to do something to get that win. And Wisconsin refuses to run zone under Bo Ryan. So I would like to see them implement a 1-3-1 against Arizona just because of how well it seemed to do against Zona in the Xavier game. But they're just going to play man-to-man defense as they always do. I think it's going to be close. Or I do think it's going to be super close, or Wisconsin's going to win by 10. I really think this is a game where Wisconsin either turns it on and is like, okay, we're ready, Kentucky, or it's another, they start out slow, Minsky doesn't get going to the second half. Same with Hayes, maybe Decker doesn't have as good of a game. It's going to be hard to get such a great game against North Carolina. I don't know if it's going to be enough. I'm worried that Arizona, with their revenge factor for wanting to get back at Wisconsin, is going to win out. I'm still going to pick the Badgers, but it's going to be close unless they finally, like, flip that switch and, you know, get it going, like, play how they could play, especially with Trayvon Jackson now back in the fold, just adds another good player to their bench. And like you said, I don't think Arizona's stocked with talent except for Ashley. And even Tarzewski, a lot of people forget that Tarzewski had to get pulled last year because Frank Kaminsky was just manhandling him. He could do any. Tarzewski just couldn't guard, be out on the block, out at the perimeter. Sean Miller literally couldn't play Tarzewski because he was getting just totally worked. So we'll see what happens this year if he's adjusted. But I'd really like to see Wisconsin-Kentucky Final Four, but we'll see what happens in this game. See how Wisconsin starts. I think that's going to be key.
Yeah. To me, I've got a few things. One, first thing is little D3 nerd as far as basketball goes. Bo Ryan coached at Platteville, and, you know, he never, you know, runs his own now. I have no idea what he did back then. I'm assuming it was the same way, and he played man. But now, like the last few years, Platteville's, like, known for playing a 1-3-1 zone, so that's just kind of interesting. And how Xavier employed it, and Zona had troubles with it, so it would be funny if Wisconsin actually used the 1-3-1 zone. I highly doubt they will, like you said, but it's just funny. Second thing, like you said, Arizona's missing Aaron Gordon. He went fourth in the draft. They're missing Nick Johnson, who was their starting shooting guard, who was a senior. So this definitely isn't the same Arizona team. They didn't just add Stanley Johnson, and Brandon Ashley is back healthy, and so they're just, you know, so much better than they were a year ago. I don't think that's the case at all. I think they're about as good as they were a year ago. I think a year ago their offense was maybe a little better. With Nick Johnson, he just added another, you know, shooter as far as that offense went. This year their offense, like you said, it's nothing special. Their defense is what they live by. So, you know, and the third thing was that, yeah, Brandon Ashley's back, and, yeah, he can defend Kaminsky on the perimeter much better, obviously, this time around. But, again, if you throw Tarzewski in the mix, who's he going to guard? Nigel Hayes, who can also stretch the floor. He's not as dangerous as Kaminsky, but he can still knock down a three. He can still knock down 17-footers. He can still drive. That's going to be a mismatch no matter who Tarzewski's on. So Wisconsin's got two guys that can stretch the floor as far as bigs are concerned. You know, realistically, all five. But so Tarzewski's going to have a mismatch no matter what. You know, Aaron Gordon kind of played that lockdown role, and Stanley Johnson somewhat replaces that. And having Ashley back helps. Defensively, but again, like I said, Tarzewski's, it's going to be a problem for Arizona. So I don't think Arizona's really all that much better than they were a year ago, and I think Wisconsin is a little better than they were a year ago. So I think I'm with you that I think I saw the line on this game, and it was Wisconsin by 5, unless I'm thinking of something else.
That was the North Carolina game. It's actually Arizona by 1.5, which is super shocking to me.
Really? Huh.
Yep.
Yeah, I would favor Wisconsin, like you said, probably, you know, 6, 7, 8 points. They'll be up 4 or 5 late, and then they'll make their free throws because they're Wisconsin. I just think Wisconsin's a little better this year. I don't think the Brandon Ashley thing is going to make all that bit of difference because I think Tarzewski is going to have problems defensively anyway. And offensively, he's not a monster to begin with. So I don't think he's going to play much of a factor at all, just like last year. So I'm with you in the fact that I think Kentucky and Wisconsin will meet again in the Final Four. But got about 10 minutes left here to discuss the other side of the bracket. But to roll through the East, Louisville beat NC State tonight. That's another game I didn't watch pretty much a lick of. I ultimately didn't have a huge interest, to be honest. But to me, Louisville's still a team that's extremely dependent on their defense, but offensively they're surviving. I think it's Chris Snyder is their point guard. He's going to be their point guard for the next few years. He's a really good freshman who's replaced Chris Jones a lot better than I thought he would. I thought this Louisville team would fall on their face because of losing their point guard, but they haven't really. Offensively, they're still challenged, but defensively, they're still locking teams down. The first round, they gave up 55 to Northern Iowa. They allowed 53. Then NC State tonight, they allowed 65. So they're still holding teams down defensively, and offensively they're just getting enough to get by. Michigan State beat Oklahoma 62-58. It's just, I don't know. This East region I figured would be the region that I would have trouble in as far as picking games. Michigan State, talent-wise, as opposed to the last few years, not what it was, but yet they're here, and they're, I would assume that they're favored in this game over Louisville. That's just my guess. I think they're a better overall team. I think they can play defense. I think their offense is definitely better. So realistically, I would favor Michigan State just because, you know, I think the coaches qualify each other out. But I think Michigan State just has – I favor Louisville's defense. I favor Michigan State's offense. I just think the Spartans have the better overall team. They have more bigs than they can go to. I think that Montrezl Harrell isn't overrated, but at the same time, he's like a 6'8 power forward. Michigan State's bigs aren't great, but they have size. Louisville's not a big team. So I just ultimately think Michigan State kind of out-toughs them and can score easier than Louisville will be able to. So I would say Michigan State by, I don't know, probably, again, like Wisconsin, probably 6, 7, 8 points. They'll have a close lead. And so far this tournament, they've been shooting well late at the free throw line, which coming in, they were ranked like 320th or something in the country in free throw percentage as a team, which was kind of going to be their downfall. But it hasn't been to this point because Valentine and Trice are taking the free throws at the end of the game, and they're both above 80%. So they've been saving themselves as far as the free throw line is concerned, like they haven't been so far this regular season. What do you think about that matchup?
I've been trying to look at the lines where you've been talking, but I don't know if they have it out yet for Michigan State. Although, I mean, the game did just finish, but usually they get them out pretty quick, but I can't find them. I would assume Michigan State would be favored too. Typical Michigan State team, you don't think they're that great. They kind of do a swoon, and then in March, they're all of a sudden magnificent. They took Badgers to overtime in the Big Ten Championship, probably should have won that game. And they knocked off number 2 Virginia. I think Virginia would have won that game if Anderson had been healthy, but he just was too limited, and Michigan State lost the upset. And then their path with NC State, you know, knocking off Villanova and now playing Louisville. I felt that Northern Iowa was a strong team, but they just had a bad game against Louisville, and Northern Iowa was actually my pick out of this bracket, so I was kind of disappointed in that. Louisville, yeah, as Montrezl Harrell, he led the team in scoring with 24 points. He kind of, their offense, the offense has been the knock for Louisville this year. They probably have one of the worst offenses in the teams remaining, but they've stepped it up these last couple games. So we'll see how that does against Michigan State. Maybe an ugly matchup, I think. Michigan State didn't pull away from Oklahoma until late. They only won that game by 4, and that was with the help of Travis Trice hitting a bunch of threes. And I think he finished with, let me check, 20 points as well. Yeah, he had 24 as well, and Valentine had 18 for Michigan State. So, yeah, that matchup, two Hall of Fame coaches. A game I probably the one I care least about, to be honest. Everything else is basically chalk. And this region was just so weird. But, of course, it's Louisville, Michigan State, go figure. So, yeah, I don't have much more to add on that. I think Michigan State will probably be favored. I think they'll end up pulling it out.
Well, maybe we'll be different here. Got about 5 minutes left. Just going to quickly breeze through Duke, Utah. Duke, I mean, Utah kept it close. Defensively, they're a really good team. DeLon Wright picked up his third foul in the first half on, you know, even this coming from a Duke fan was a terrible call. So that kind of hurt Utah, but at the same time, they closed it to 5 by the half. So, I don't know, it kind of evened out in that sense, but obviously in the second half, you don't want to pick up your fourth right away. But Duke overall, I mean, they're just the better team. I think that Utah has had problems scoring in the past. You know, against Georgetown, they put up 75, but I think that if the three ball is not going down for Utah, then they've got some issues offensively. Poeltl couldn't do his thing against Okafor, now that Okafor's a great defender. But Utah didn't have that advantage inside that they usually have. And then at the guard spot, you know, like I said, DeLon Wright had his problems, you know, just through fouls. So they had a problem scoring, you know, only putting up 57. They held Duke to 63, which is, you know, huge, but they just didn't have enough offensively. Gonzaga, UCLA, Gonzaga's just the better overall team. UCLA's, I'm losing my voice now, but UCLA's got bigs, but Gonzaga just overall was the better team in that one, realistically. They won by 12. They kind of coasted throughout the second half, as far as I can tell. But so this Duke-Gonzaga matchup, it'll be interesting for me to see Okafor against a big that can handle him physically. Karnowski for Gonzaga 7'1", like 280 pounds. So he's literally bigger than Okafor. Obviously, Okafor is more skilled, and Karnowski can't move, you know, as well being that big. But it's not as though he's, you know, he can't move. He's not going to get blown by every time. But I expect Okafor to probably do his thing, but Gonzaga's not going to have to double like Utah kind of decided that they were going to do, which left just open driving lanes for the guards for Duke, especially, I'm blanking on his name, Justice Winslow. He had a huge game, whether it was, you know, the couple straight threes he had in the second half, to pull Duke out of a little rut they were going through, or just making defensive plays. He's been enormous for them, and I expect him to continue, you know, being huge. I think that Duke's perimeter game is really strong offensively, and that's the one knock on Gonzaga, is their perimeter defense. I think that their guards are not too quick outside of Wesley. They don't play the greatest of defense. I think Gonzaga will be able to put up points, no question about it. But, you know, it's a game that'll be in the 70s, in my opinion. But I think Duke will just have an easier time only because Gonzaga's perimeter defense is not too strong. I think Duke's perimeter defense is not strong either. But I believe in Justice Winslow being able to lock down whoever's hot for Gonzaga on the outside. Karnowski won't have his usual advantage, kind of like Poeltl for Utah going against Okafor. So he won't be a major factor. Wiltjer will be interesting. Sabonis will be interesting. I think both those guys are better than Emile Jefferson and Plumlee. So, you know, interior-wise, I think it's a wash. Guard-wise, I give the advantage to Duke, so I favor them by a slim margin. I think it's going to be a really good game, though, which I don't think a lot of people expected coming into this tournament that these two teams would be matched up against each other, much less, you know, being a really good game. I think it's got the potential to be extremely fun to watch and maybe the most fun to watch of them all, though Wisconsin-Arizona will probably be really entertaining as well. So what do you think about that little Duke-Gonzaga matchup?
I think it's going to come down to one or two possessions as well. Just quickly on UCLA-Gonzaga. UCLA, I thought, was the least deserving Sweet 16 team. They beat an SMU team at the buzzer I still feel it was a BS goaltending call just because that ball had no chance of going in. And then they played 14 seed UAB, so congrats, you're in the Sweet 16. And then they get blown out by Gonzaga. Gonzaga just controlled them. UCLA didn't belong there. Duke, Utah, that was a great matchup. Watched most of that game. Justice Winslow, Justice, that's with two S's, no C. I was going to tweet that at you, and I forgot. I think you spelled it with one C. It's just funny because it's, you know, he spells his team with two S's, which is kind of unique. But he had a great game. I felt he was Duke's best player, even better than Okafor. Okafor had only 6 points. Those 2 7-footers, Jakob Poeltl. I looked up how to pronounce his name correctly, so I wanted to get that right. And the other 7-footer, I don't know off the top of my head right now, but they helped contain Okafor, hold him to 6 points, 4 turnovers. He did have 8 rebounds, but still, it wasn't typical Okafor. Justice Winslow was huge. And their Duke's guards are going to